Hi, this is Dave Holland, and when I'm traveling through Connecticut, I listen to In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond on WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, radio for the people, and that means you.
Yeah, all right. Dave Holland from the landmark album Conference of the Birds back in 1972 that was released. And the name of that track is Seesaw. And that is a track that kind of takes you out there, a lot of free improvisation. And as I remember back in the 70s when I was listening to that, first one of the free jazz tracks that I could really understand and really relate to. The reason you could relate to that is Dave Holland's great compositions behind it and the way that the musicians weave his compositions throughout his music. All right, we're going to do a little Dave Holland special today here on In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond. Welcome, listeners. I'm glad you could join us. 2 hours of great jazz music ahead of you. And as I mentioned, we're going to feature a Dave Holland special that includes an interview, about 20 minutes of talking with Dave Holland prior to the Tanglewood concert that he put on last week. So you'll hear that. I recently came across an album called The Monterey Quartet, and it also features Dave Holland. And this is an assemblage of great modern jazz musicians. I think it's about as good of a modern jazz quartet as you can put together. It features Dave Holland on bass, Gonzalo Rubalcaba on piano, Chris Potter on sax, and Eric Harland on drums. And we're going to hear a track from that called 50.
That was a composition by Gonzalo Rubalcaba. 50.
On September 6th, I had the opportunity to sit down with the great bass player and composer, Dave Holland, before his performance at the 2009 Tanglewood Jazz Festival. Dave's career took off after being invited by Miles Davis to come to the U.S. from his native U.K. During that tenure, Dave worked on the landmark recordings In a Silent Way and Bitches Brew. From there, Dave went on to collaborate with such greats as Thelonious Monk, Chick Corea, Anthony Braxton, and many more. As a leader, Dave has produced over 20 CDs with a variety of different small ensembles and big bands. All right, first of all, thank you. Thanks, Dave, for spending a few minutes with us before the concert tonight.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to do so.
Yeah, I'm honored to have you sitting here next to me.
Thank you.
Now, you've had such an amazing career over the last 40-plus years. You've been in some really landmark sessions and played with some great legends. Do you ever take the time to kind of reflect back on your career and, you know, for one thing, think how blessed you are? What were the highlights over those last 40 years? What are some of those artistic high points in your career?
Well, you know, in terms of reflection, occasionally I do think about that, of course, and I guess as I get older, I sort of look back and think, wow, that was some really amazing experiences I've had and how fortunate I was.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I'm kind of looking forward, you know, and thinking about what I'm doing next and and what's going on. And what's important to me now is the other projects that I'm involved with now and where they're going to go and where that's leading me. And I've got several new projects that I've started up recently. This is the Octet, of course, is a new project.
Right.
We're going to be releasing a new recording in October. And I've also got a flamenco project that I've been developing the last two years with some Spanish gypsy musicians who are just wonderful players. And, you know, they really play from the heart. And that music is extremely deep in so many ways. You know, it comes from a very deep personal place in their life and their culture. But it's also great detail and sophistication to it, too. And to be honest, I hadn't realized that until I got involved with it. Yeah. And I mean, I always admired the music, but when I started to really work on it with these musicians. So those things are really interesting to me. And I'm mostly interested right now in really keeping a chance to develop my music and my, you know, keep learning and having new experiences. Obviously, the time with Miles was a wonderful opportunity for me as a 21-year-old musician. It was an extraordinary chance to come to America from England, which is, of course, where I was born, and to play with one of the great, great players in the music and to have a chance to learn and watch how he worked and how he put his music together. But, you know, I've had some wonderful opportunities and it's very hard to single one thing out.
Yeah.
You know, the things are significant at certain times in your life.
Right.
And they don't necessarily have the same significance if they happen now. But I've been very fortunate. I've been able to find the situations that have really been right for me at that moment in my life.
So. Right. Speaking of Miles, can you tell me something about the process that took place with Miles in creating the music of Bitches Brew and In a Silent Way? And, you know, was there anything written down? Did he come up with these ideas right on the spot? What was the process like?
Miles had a way of working at that time where he had some general ideas about maybe the groove and maybe some small melodic sketches and bass lines and things like that. But he also was letting the music have a very open feel to it as well. So there were things that held it together, but at the same time, a lot of elements that were left up to the musicians to figure it out. And I remember Bitches Brew, you know, when we were recording that, all the musicians were like, what is it we're trying to do here? You know, and everybody was searching and trying to figure out where we were supposed to go with the music. And it really has this exploration kind of feel to it, which I think was what Miles was looking for.
Yeah.
He didn't want to have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. He wanted to have this organic development of the music. And often he directed the music while we were recording. He would say, okay, now you play, or you know, he'd have some...
Well, did he say, now you play this, or give you some charts, or did it just say, you play?
Yeah, sometimes he'd have a specific voicing that he likes, a pianist, or he'd say to me, you know, work on this bass line, or sometimes he'd ask me to make up a bass line.
Yeah.
But he'd have a general concept that he was working on, and he let the musicians fill in the blanks a little bit, which is why I think the music was such a great experience to play, was because... It demanded of you your creative input. It wasn't somebody dictating to you how they wanted the music in exact terms.
Yeah.
It was more like, okay, this is the area we're looking for. Yeah. Let me see what you can do with it.
Right, right.
And that's how it came together.
It was certainly an incredible time in jazz, and so much incredible music grew out of that. Take you back even further. When you were in England, a teenager perhaps, or in your early 20s, well, in your early 20s you were with Miles, but in England, there was the rock scene going on there, and there were some incredible things being done, British rock around there. Did you grow up around London, in the London
area? No, I grew up in the Midlands area, which actually was the breeding ground for a lot of, you know, a lot of that music came out of working class environments.
Yeah.
You know, the Beatles, the Moody Blues were a Birmingham group. There were a lot of bands like that, and I was a young teenager who was playing bass guitar, and we were playing those bands in those venues. In fact, we ran into the Beatles once when before they were even known in the early 60s. They were doing the circuit, you know, driving around in a panel van. That was my starting point, really, was to do that. And we had a band, and we were reasonably successful on the local level, but we never really had the spark that it would take to create a new sound and a new band. We were more... So, you know, we were playing a lot of cover tunes of things.
Right.
And by the time I was 16, I was really starting to get interested in jazz.
That was where my question was heading, was there a certain point in time where, you know, you took the road to jazz, which I'm very glad you did, as opposed to pursuing a rock
career?
What were the influences that would... make that decision?
Well, I turned professional when I was 15, and at that point I started to say, well, let me start really checking out some other ways of playing the bass. And I was still a bass guitarist at that time. And I looked in Downbeat, the jazz magazine, and I saw Ray Brown had won the poll.
Right.
Never heard of him. Huh. So I said, let me go out and find a Ray Brown record. And while I was there, I found a couple of Leroy Vinegar records. That he was on the cover with a bass. That's the only reason I bought the record, because the bass player was on the cover. And I took him home, and that's what changed my life. I heard those records, and within a couple of weeks I'd bought myself an acoustic bass and cheap plywood one, and I started practicing with the records. I continued playing bass guitar for about another year and a half, and then the band that I was with went to Germany to play in Hamburg, just like the Beatles did. We thought that was our road to success. And you had to be 18 to play in these clubs there, and I wasn't 18 yet, so they took another bass player. And I was home for the summer, and so I took a job with a dance band at a summer season. And that was my first gig as a full-time bass player. I never went back to playing rock and roll, or, you know, obviously I did other things, you know, when with Miles I started playing bass guitar again with him. But the acoustic bass has really been my main instrument ever since then.
Right, right. I'd like to know about Dave Holland as a composer. And what is your approach to writing? Do you write specifically for the bass? Do you first come up with a bass line all the time and then develop the music around that? Or what is your approach to writing?
Any way I can, basically. You know, sometimes it'll start with a bass line, but that's not generally, you know, it's not, that's not the case always. I mean, most of the time I'll be working on something. Sometimes it'll be some kind of mood that I'm feeling that I want to try and express in music. Sometimes it'll be just some rhythm that I'm sort of interested in that I'll see if I can write something around this rhythmic approach. Sometimes it's a connection of chords that I like, and then I start to work with that and work a melody out. So there's lots of ways of entering into it. Entering into it is the hard part. Once you get inside it, then you just follow the thread. And you try different things. You see, well, where does this lead me? No, I don't like that. Let me try going in this direction. And it's a stringing it out. Sometimes you have a bigger picture, you know, like with the big band, I might have a plan for how I want to, you know, have the architecture of the piece. And then within that architecture, you start to work it. And of course, as you start to work with it, the plan for the architecture changes sometimes. But, you know, so there's lots of different ways of coming at it.
And
basically, I just use whatever method seems to be leading me in a direction that's going to bring some results eventually. But I do think a lot about the players that I play with, and I often write songs that are really geared for the people I'm writing for. Everything I've ever written has been for a musical project. I very rarely write a piece of music that isn't related to something I'm going to do. And so very often I've got somebody in mind or a group in mind that I'm writing for, and then I think about how that group is and what's going to be fun for everybody to play and what's going to give them a vehicle to explore their creative thing.
I think I've heard similar things about Duke Ellington.
Well, you know, Duke's a great model for me of how to write for a band. Duke and, of course, Billy Strayhorn, his partner in composing, that, you know, they worked together for so many years. They really wrote for the band, and you know, a particular song would be written for Johnny Hodges or Cootie Williams or, you know, different players. So that's I think that's inherent in the music a lot of the time. You know, we're often working on a particular project and writing music for that project. So I'm interested in presenting the band music that's going to whet their appetite and allow their creative juices to flow.
Tonight's Tonight's performance, yep. You've got a great octet with you. Do you want to talk a little bit about the octet
and the
music you'll be performing?
Yeah, this is a band
tonight.
We actually did perform first in 2001 for an Arts Council tour of England. This is when I first put the band together. And we've done a couple of gigs since then, but we really started working again last year, and we went in the studio and recorded... No, I'm sorry. We recorded live at Birdland in January in New York. And we're going to release the album... first of all, as an internet release, we're starting a new website. I have a website for several years at daveholland.com, but we've redesigned it, and it's going to be launched in a week or two with a whole lot of new options of downloading music, downloading scores and lead sheets and things like that. And this is going to be first released as an internet release on the site, and then... a few months later, we'll be releasing it as a hard copy, and it'll be distributed.
Great, great. And do you actually have a release date for that website?
It's being planned, I would think, in the next week or two, actually. Okay. If you go to daveholland.com now, you'll see a new splash page, which will tell you about it, some free downloads to download. You can sign up for the mailing list. There's a link to my old website. There's a link to several social networking sites like Twitter and Facebook and MySpace, where you know I can interact with people. So I'm very excited about this. Actually, it's a big leap forward for me in terms of what we're doing. Of course, I've had my own record company for the last four years, and we've had three releases already on the record label, and this will be the fourth one.
All right.
The fifth one will be the Flamenco project, which we recorded also in March.
Right. I've got one more question, and this is regarding your bass playing.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what your theory is on the bass. How much of your bass playing is strictly rhythm versus the other elements that bass can bring to the music? And what are those other elements that bass, other than the traditional rhythm section playing?
Well, you know, the bass deals with the same thing every instrument plays with, which is the three main elements of music: rhythm, harmony, and melody.
Okay.
And as a rhythm section, of course, the traditional role of the bass is to work closely with the drums, and also to, if you have a piano, or in my case we have vibraphone, to work with the chordal instrument, which is that forms the rhythm section. We act in different ways. In a traditional role, you play mostly a supportive role. But in contemporary jazz, it's a much more interactive role that everybody has. So we do a lot of dialoguing, and you know, I look for horn players who get inside the rhythm section and who have a conversation with it, not just playing on top of it.
Right, right.
And so for me, I'm interested in this. One of the things that attracted me to jazz right from the beginning was the whole dialogue idea, the fact that, you know, there's a communication going on. It's not just people up there playing their own individual parts, but everybody's talking to each other musically. And it's what I loved about the music from the beginning. I mean, my first jazz experiences were in New Orleans bands playing, you know, the traditional Louis Armstrong, King Oliver music. And I've never forgotten the sound of that three horn front line and how it used to sound. So, you know, to me, that's such an important part. So the bass... as over the years, through the contributions of all the great bass players that have gone before, you know, it's been developed in its role from just a purely accompanying role, and now takes a real role in the dialogue and the interaction with everybody. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much,
You're
Dave.
Very welcome.
I really appreciate it.
I'm
sure this will be very interesting to our listeners.
Okay. They heard Chris Potter practicing in the background, too.
I enjoyed that little accompaniment. That was fine.
Yeah. Okay. And, thank you very much, then.
right. That is Mr. B is the name of that track. And that is it's a bonus track off of a session from Dave Holland's most recent release, Pass It On. It is not on the CD, but it's a track you can get actually off the internet from his website at www.daveholland.com. Mr. B is the name of that. The personnel on that is Antonio Hart on alto, Robin Eubanks on trombone, Sasha Sapagian on trumpet, Mulgrew Miller on piano, Eric Harland on drums, and of course, Dave Holland playing the double bass. And before that, you heard an interview with Dave Holland. I hope you enjoyed that. We did that last weekend up at Tanglewood at the music festival there. And it was a great time, and certainly it was a thrill to meet Dave Holland. And let me just go through some of what you heard on that as far as the music's concerned. During the breaks during that interview, I played Bring It On from Dave Holland's Big Band, and the name of that album is Overture. And before that, another segment in there that I played was from Spanish Key, of course, the great Miles Davis and Bitches Brew. And that interview kind of started out over my introduction over a bed of music that is was Pass It On from Dave Holland in his album, as I mentioned, Pass It On, title track. All right. Before that, we heard from Dave Holland again, but this is from a quartet called the Monterey Quartet. And that features Dave Holland on bass, Gonzalo Rubalcaba on piano, Chris Potter on sax, Eric Harland on drums. And that's from the 2007 Monterey Jazz Festival. And we started out tonight's show with Conference of the Birds, featuring, of course, that's a landmark album. It really is a great album showcasing Dave Holland in his kind of free jazz, his free jazz mode. Dave Holland on bass, Anthony Braxton and Sam Rivers playing saxophone on that, and Barry Altschul on drums. All right, time now is 7:46, and you're listening to In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond. My name is Ken, and having a good time here playing some jazz and listening to that very interesting and revealing interview from Dave Holland. Another live show that we saw last night over at the Polish National Home as part of the Pork Pie Hat Jazz Series. We saw Al Foster Quartet, and it was a really fine show and a very nice venue, actually, the Polish National Home. Good food, good drink, and of course, good music. And this is, as I said, part of the Pork Pie Hat Festival, which is 9 concerts that are coming up. And I'll tell you a little bit more about it in my next mic break. But I want to mention, with Al Foster was a tenor and soprano sax player who was just kicking, who I've never really heard before, and really just kind of was just smoking all night long. And I did pick up an album. This sax player's name is Eli DeGibri, an Israeli sax player. We're going to hear something from his album called Emotionally Available. Thank you. Time now is 8:02, and this is WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut, 91.7 FM, Radio for the People. And you just heard Ignacio Baroa and from his album called Codes, and that features, Ignacio Baroa, great drummer, and Gonzalo Rubalcaba, who we heard earlier today, on synthesizers, Dave Sanchez on tenor sax, John Patitucci on bass, Ed Simon on acoustic piano, Felipe La Magolia on alto sax, and Armando Gola on electric bass on that one. And before that, you heard from Eli DeGibri from his album Emotionally Available, and the name of that track is Pum Pum. And as I said earlier, we saw Eli playing along with Al Foster. And just a great, great exhibition of sax playing he put on. But this, you heard him with his own quartet, and that features Eli DeGibri on sax, Aaron Goldberg on piano, who I think is probably one of the best modern-day piano players in jazz, and we've seen him quite a bit, and he seems to be recording with quite a few different ensembles. Ben Street on bass and Jeff Ballard on drums. Pum Pum from the album Emotionally Available, Eli DeGibri, fine sax player. All right, now I mentioned Ignacio Baroa, who you heard right before this mic break, and pleased to tell all you listeners out there that Ignacio Baroa, and he'll be leading a quartet as part of the Pork Pie Hat Jazz Series coming up. The concert is on September 25th in the Polish National Home here in Hartford, Connecticut. And I've got a pair of tickets to give away. I'd love to give a pair of tickets away for Ignacio Baroa Quartet. As I said, September 25th, part of the Pork Pie Jazz Festival. So I'll take a caller at 860-486-9487. First caller to give me a call will get that pair of tickets. 860-486-9487. Give me a call and you get a free pair of tickets. So give me a call. We're going to continue on now with one of the masters of jazz of all time, of course, and that'd be Cannonball Adderley from his album In New York. We're going to hear Gemini.